you guys can have a seat. It was great worship with you. As you do, please welcome Rustin Rosado.
Yeah, that totally backfired at the nine, and it was like a zero response. So it was really exciting. We'll get better at that stuff, right? So last week, for those of you who are here, just to get you kind of interacting early, how many of you were here last week? Good. Okay. So here's what I realize is that not only am I not dumb enough to think that you guys hang on my every word and don't miss anything I say, but some of you weren't here. So I want to recap a little bit of where we started, because last week was very vision heavy for the venue. And it was sort of me sharing my heart and sort of the road that's gotten to me to here today, where I sat back and went, I observed for 6 months, I spent some time kind of looking at the venue, seeing what was going on when I came in here about a year ago. And then from there, I sort of went, okay, Jesus, where to now? Where do you want to take this group of believers, and what do we want to do next? Because if you're not at the helm, we're going to fail. And one of the things that's really been on my heart was just community, that we really start to cling together, not that you guys walk into the venue and go, okay, we're here, we're looking at Derek and Rustin, they're our connection point, but rather than doing this, that you guys start to do this, and you guys start to connect as a family of God, and really start to care for each other. And we talked about Ephesians 4:12, that when I read Ephesians 4:12, what I don't see is, Rustin, your job is to go do the work of the ministry. I see, Rustin, your job as a pastor, as a shepherd, is to equip the saints to go do the work of the ministry. That's my job. And so if I'm not equipping you week in and week out to continue to care for the family of God, for you guys to be ministers and to see yourself that way, if I'm not empowering you to go do the work of the ministry, I'm not doing my job. You know, my dream is that we would get to the end of a service, and I kind of cast this vision a little bit, and that I would sit there and tell you, listen, what I want to see today is I want to get done, I want to stand off the podium for anybody who really needs me, and have no one in front of me. But that the venue would be caring for itself. And I'll tell you, just because of what I read in Scripture, I don't think I'm trying to like lighten my workload here. I got plenty to do around here. I'm telling you, I just think that's what God's called us to do, is to be a family of God that cares for each other. So that's what we talked about, and then we kind of jumped into the book of 1 Peter. And so what I want to do today is I want to give you a little overview, and again, some of this is recap from last week, but I'm dropping you into the middle of a New Testament book that you may not have any context for. And so I kind of identified three big themes in 1 Peter, and one is that there's a problem. And that problem is this. It's that Peter identifies chapter 1, verse 1, that this group he's writing to, his audience, is a group of elect exiles. And that's the problem. They're not at home. Things aren't going well. And it's pretty safe to assume anytime you read an epistle, whether it's by Paul, whether it's by Peter, regardless of what's going on there, you're looking at it going, a problem existed and they wrote a letter in response. That's kind of what's going on here. So as we look at this and we look at 1 Peter, you see this problem that these guys, these gals, this body of believers is just having a tough time figuring out how to do this whole family of God thing. And that's kind of the problem. So elect exiles, they're not comfortable, they're not at home. The second theme you see over and over again is that Peter is encouraging them, but he's encouraging them in a very specific way. It's with identity. He is wrapping this group of kind of wayward believers that are really questioning what's going on in their life and this whole community of Christ. He just keeps taking more identity in Jesus and wrapping them in it as comfort, as encouragement. So encouragement, identity is the second theme. And the last one is Peter offers this solution to the problem of being an elect exile. And the solution is this. He sits there and he goes, okay, if you're an elect exile, you're one of God's kids already, see this and see it clearly. A Christ-based community solves your exilic problem. If you are wrapped as a community around each other, or the picture that he uses is going from being in this muck and this mire, living a defeated life, into being a living stone, but not for the purpose that you're a bunch of really good-looking, like, living stones around each other, but that you're being built into a spiritual house for the purpose of offering spiritual sacrifices to God through Christ. And that's the whole picture of kind of what's going on in last week's text. So that was really the big idea from last week. So see this, because Peter's going to do this over and over again through the entire book. If you want a great read in your devotional time, go through 1 Peter and look for these two themes. It's identity. It's this 1-2 punch. Identity, community. Identity, community. And Peter just works them back and forth against each other every chapter for the entire letter. And so let's look at what we came out of last week, and this is going to be chapter 2, and we were in verses 1 through 8. So for those of you that are following along, here's the big idea from last week. This is verses 4 and 5. As you come to him, a living stone rejected by men, but in the sight of God chosen and precious, you yourselves, like living stones, are being built up as a spiritual house, to be a holy priesthood, to offer spiritual sacrifices acceptable to God through Jesus Christ. That's what he built on. And so he's offering this problem to their solution to their problem, saying, listen, your big picture idea is not just to become the best you that you can be, but to take it from there and be built into a living stone within a spiritual house. Now, Peter shifts from there into kind of starting to spell out some of the identity stuff. So again, we go from community right back to identity. And he starts here in verse 7, he says this, so the honor is for you who believe, but for those who do not believe, the stone that the builders rejected has become the cornerstone. What's he saying? Well, the old system, the Pharisees, everything that was going on there, he came, they said, sorry, we're out, and rejected him. Bad news, he's the cornerstone. He's the one you needed. And so Peter's kind of wrapping this idea of, hey, listen, there's some that aren't going to be in your camp, okay? There's some who are not the elect exiles. They're not elect. They're sitting here as non-believers going, I don't want anything to do with that. And then from there kind of spells it out. And the reason this is important is because today's passage is going to start with the word but, which means we're coming out of something. That's what we're coming out of. Peter's kind of working the idea of being a non-believer, being a believer against each other, and that kind of sets us up for today. So here's where we start in verse 9 today. We're going to go in verses 9 through 12, and this is how they read. But you are a chosen race, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a people for his own possession, that you may proclaim the excellencies of him who called you out of darkness into marvelous light, that you were not a people, but now you are God's people. Once you had not received mercy, but now you have received mercy. Beloved, I urge you as sojourners and exiles to abstain from the passions of the flesh, which wage war against your soul. Keep your conduct among the Gentiles honorable, so that when they speak against you as evildoers, that they may see your good deeds and glorify God on the day of visitation. Now, Peter starts with, okay, but, right, you're not in this camp over here, you're not in this group of non-believers, but, and then he hits three totally loaded terms. Like, don't take these at face value, and I'm going to open them up in some great detail here, but let's look at them real quick. A chosen race, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, and a people of his own possession. So first one here, chosen race. I want to spell out something for all of us, and I want you to journey back with me to junior high. Painful for some of you, I know, but kind of go back with me and make it even worse. Let's go to junior high gym class, right, which was where all of us were like anywhere but there. And so picture with me, we're all on the line and it's time for dodgeball, which like it's just getting worse. Like, right, this was everyone's nightmare moment. And standing right out there are the two captains. We all remember what these guys look like. These were the ones who like exploded into manhood like at 12. And they're standing out there with their beards and the rest of us are back here like, how is he doing that? This makes no sense to me. And so they're standing out there and they're getting ready to do what? Pick teams. That's exactly right. And so what happens? The other 25 of us from our class are standing on this line, and they just start you with me. And it's like best players go and this and this. And now we're down to the last two of us. And so here we stand. Now let's be honest. Between the last two people that are picked, there's really not a tremendous amount of difference in talent, okay? Like the two of us are standing here going, if I survive this without getting hit in the face and breaking my glasses, it's a total win for me, right? And so here we stand, but there's something very different about how one of these two individuals is about to feel. Because this guy gets picked, and this guy they're just stuck with. Totally different experience. Difference in talent? Nope. But different experience, because there's a reality of this guy got chosen. However, this guy, his team doesn't even turn around. They just start walking to the side of the gym, and he's sort of trying to catch up. It's this like, okay, I guess you guys are stuck with me. I want you to see how relational these four statements are. Because there's no argument God in all of his majesty and his holiness, that's not being depleted from here to see him as incredibly relational. But these four phrases are so just absolutely filled with relationship that it's this stuff right here where Peter goes, okay, you guys are kind of broken and not getting it. What I want you to see is this.
You were chosen. It wasn't by happenstance. It wasn't a mistake that you landed on God's team. No, no, no. See this very clearly. He chose you. And not only did he choose you, he actually paid an extravagant price to have you. You didn't just land on his team by mistake. Because this group is sitting out there kind of going, what are we going to do? And Peter, again, is just wrapping this idea of, let's start from the very beginning, you were chosen. This is important. Christ is thrilled that he has you. And then from there, he steps into our next phrase, and I'm going to paint a little more kind of color around this than I did last week. He calls them a royal priesthood. Now, this is just loaded with Old Testament kind of intent. This invokes a lot of like pictures from what's going on in the Old Testament. His audience would have gathered some of this. So this is what his audience is hearing when they're called a royal priesthood. Old Testament picture. I did a little bit of this last week. We're going bigger. Old Testament Levitical picture was one tribe could serve as the priests. They were the, good, Levites. That's exactly right. So the Levites served as the priests within the Levitical system. And so what would happen is I would sin, and then what I would do is I would bring my sacrifice to the priests and would leave it before them. Now, it was their job, in accordance with the Holy Scriptures of the Old Testament, to know what to do with this. And so they would take it, they would break it, they would bleed it, and they would prepare it, in accordance with the Old Testament, for sacrifice on the altar. And that would cover my sins. That would stand in place of what was owed on my behalf. Only the Levites could do this. Now, as we move forward, what we see is that that existed in a place. Place was very important to the Jewish people. When they were wandering, it was the tabernacle. It was an elaborate thing that they built, packed up, moved. It went everywhere with them. As time moved forward, it was the temple. And so within the temple, there was the outer courts, the wall, inner courts, and it moves down. And basically, the entire nation of Israel really centered around this one room in the center of the temple. It was called the Holy of Holies. It was where the Ark of the Covenant was. It was where one day a year, the high priest, the biggest of all of them, would walk in and he would sprinkle blood on the Ark of the Covenant to atone for the sins of the entire nation of Israel. Want to hear something cool? When Christ was sacrificed on the cross, the last physical sacrifice that ever needed to be offered was that perfect lamb. And when that happened, guess what happened in the Holy of Holies? This giant curtain that separated the most important room to the entire nation of Israel that was super thick tore. Symbolizing what? God's loose. He's back where he always longed to be, which was dwelling among his people. His people that he chose, his royal priesthood, his holy nation, the people of his own possession. Now, all of that is encapsulated for this group that he's looking at and saying, guess what? You are now that royal priesthood. Well, what's that mean? How does that function? Well, it functions like this. They go from living a life in the muck and the mire into being into a living stone, but not just stopping there, going into a spiritual house where they'll do what? Where they'll offer spiritual sacrifices acceptable to God through Jesus Christ. You see how it all fits together here? They are now God's hands and feet. Does this sound familiar? We can all take this and directly apply it to our lives. We are now that royal priesthood. We will now be the intermediaries between God and man, carrying the good news or the gospel to the world around us. All that packed into these two little words, royal priesthood. From there, Peter starts to move into, you are to be a holy nation. So you've been chosen. From there, you have something really important to do within this royal priesthood kind of realm and frame. And then after that, remember, because you were chosen and you have something to do, you should be a holy nation. I loved when Lucas Cooper did this. I was in high school, and he took this analogy that was really helpful for me because it wrapped around food. And he said, Rustin, I want you to imagine with me, I'm headed to the grill, and on a plate, I have a batch of steaks that I'm going to grill. If I take one of those steaks and I lay out tin foil and I lay this tin foil down and put the steak in it, and I take one of the steaks and put it in the fridge, I have set it apart. It has been set apart. That is the frame. That's what this word holy means. It means set apart from. That's an incredible thing for Peter to ask them to do, because guess what? They're not at home. They are exiles. They'll be referred to in a minute as sojourners, having no place, having no home. And what Peter is saying is this, and I want to take this to each of us today. You guys see, this is really where the rubber meets the road of Christianity. Each and every one of us has the same struggle week in and week out, and it's this. How do we be in the world but not of it? How do we live both in truth and in love? How do I go about being around this world that is constantly drawing at my flesh to be a part of it, but yet my soul longs for something so much bigger? And what Peter here is saying, listen, guys, take my word for it. You need to be a holy nation. If you're going to be, if you know you're chosen and you're going to function in this place of a royal priesthood, you must be set apart. You must belong to him. Give you a couple of examples. Egypt and captivity, so slavery in Egypt, and God does crazy things, extravagant circumstances to bring his people out of Egypt. And there's this wonderful little exchange where it's all over. They've crossed the Red Sea. Like, tons of Egyptians have died. It's this costly process. And once they're there, he communicates through Moses, I will be your God and you will be my people. I want you to be mine. Scripture says that we serve a jealous God. Guess what? He is not interested in sharing you. He has no interest in sharing you with the rest of the world. He has no interest in allowing your attentions to be drawn somewhere else. And that is what Peter is telling them right here. You need to be a holy nation, set apart, belonging to no other. The book of Judges is probably the best example. Does anybody know how many judges there were? Seven. Do you know why there were seven? Because seven were required. They kept messing it up over and over again. The cycle within the book of Judges is super simple. It's four parts, and it's this. They would go into a stage of apostasy, and they would turn from God. From there, they would go into a place where God would send kind of judgment, and that would come their way. And they would be completely swept away by another nation. From there, they would go, I think we may have screwed this up. I don't think we did this super well. And then God would send a deliverer or a judge. Seven times, over and over again. What do we see there? God gets really mad? No, he's not going to quit. He's not going to sacrifice. He's not going to give them what they are asking for, which is leave us alone. We want to go worship the Baals. We want to head to the Asherams. We want to worship these gods of fertility that we see in the land around us. No, I'm not interested in sharing you. You are a holy nation. You will be set apart from the world. And this ties closely to this last piece of identity that Peter wraps around this group of feeble believers when he says, you are a people of his own possession. Right? He's longing for you. He wants you. Okay, so hear it loud and clear. This couldn't be more clear. Isaiah 43:8. I am the Lord. That is my name. My glory I give to no other, nor my praise to carved idols. I'm not interested in sharing you. That's the point. Now, it's 11:30, which means if we keep on this pace, I'll have you out of here in about 90 minutes. So just know we're going to start moving a little quicker here. We started with this phrase, but, meaning we're coming out of something. Now, all of that is just the first half of verse 9. In the second half, it says this, that. All of this is for a purpose. What's the that? That you may proclaim the excellencies of him who called you out of darkness into marvelous light. I want to spin this from an kind of an evangelistic frame, and I want you to see something that I think we are perfectly within the bounds of the text to see. You have a purpose. It is this. All of this is working for this reason, for you to proclaim. Proclaim what? Proclaim his excellencies. Why? Because he called you out of darkness into marvelous light. I'm going to give you an example from my life. I get those like, Rustin, tell me why the Bible doesn't work. Questions all the time. You know what? And this is a big one. Jonah gets picked on a lot. And so here's what people will say to me. You know what? You're never going to convince me that a man lived in a fish for 3 days. I'm never going to get there, Rustin. And you know what I quickly do? Because it's like, well, sure, that takes a tremendous amount of faith to imagine that that happened. I'll just look at him and say, hey, you're absolutely right. That's a big leap. But for me, I'll tell you what happened. I'll tell you how I got to that making sense. My life was a mess. I woke up on a bathroom floor 5 years ago with my life in shambles. Today, I'm a pastor over roughly 600 people. If you can explain that to me outside of God, I'm all ears, one. And two, once I saw the Lord do that and change my heart radically, I can tell you this, a guy and a fish for 3 days, a little bit bigger, a little bit easier pill to swallow. But that's it right there. That's what Peter's telling them. Listen, all of this is true, but it's for a purpose. That purpose is this, that you may proclaim his excellencies, not mine, not, hey, look what I did. Look what God did in my life, because once you start to see his ability to radically change the most stubborn of building materials, the human heart, you got a big category for a God that can do a whole lot of stuff that Scripture encapsulates. Does that make sense? It's your opportunity to go out and proclaim these excellent things that God has done in you and through you. It's now your time to go, listen, here's what it was like. This darkness, this was crazy, this was nuts. But I want you to see loud and clear, now I am marvelous light, living stone, ready to take my place. And that's an incredible thing. But that's where Peter kind of points us in the midst of this. And so from there, we kind of start moving into this last little statement, which in what I just talked about, we see a progression, right? Out of darkness into marvelous light. You see the shift there? It's the same theme we're going to see in these two right here. Once you were not a people, but now you are God's people. Once you had not received mercy, but now you have received mercy. What's he doing? You went from darkness to marvelous light. Once you were alone, you had absolutely no identity. Now, do you see that you're part of God's people? Once you had no concept for God's mercy, it was not something you even had a kind of a paradigm for. Now you are bathing in it. And you are day by day, through the conviction of the Holy Spirit, you're seeing it over and over again. He's moving us through this and basically just telling us, listen, this is really important that you see you're not who you used to be. You are not where you were. I'll tell you, one of the most encouraging statements I've ever heard was in the midst of kind of the last 5 years as the Lord was really working on my life, and something would happen where I would fail. I would fall into pride or into anger or this, and I would end up sitting down and talking to a mentor, and I'd go, when is it going to be done? When do I get to be done with this? And he'd go, Rustin, you know what? You're not where you used to be. Don't reset and think that you're clear back here. And I want to encourage a lot of you with that today. When you mess things up, I don't want you to go, oh man, see, I'm the same old person. That's not a kingdom thought. That's the enemy in your ear trying to get you to buy old junk. Don't shop at that market. Don't go there. See it loud and clear. No. He's moving you along in this sanctification process. You are becoming more like him. Are old things going to creep up? Yeah. Is it your favorite thing? No. But you need to see, you can't see yourself as where you were. There is bigger stuff going on. He is bringing you along, and that's an important thing. He's got better places for us, and that's what we've got to see. And that is Peter's kind of last word in this identity piece before he shifts back into a big left hook with the community aspect. And here's what I want you to see. This is a really cool shift. Beloved, I urge you as sojourners and exiles to abstain from the passions of the flesh, which wage war against your soul. Peter's tying back into that theme of, listen, guys, in case you think I'm just kind of unaware of what's going on, I know that you're in exile. I know that things aren't great. But even though that's true, I need you to really engage, and I need you to really see that you cannot engage in every little passion of the flesh. Now, I recognize that that's somewhat inflammatory language, so I want to kind of take it apart a little bit. When I first read this text, when I was preparing this sermon, I went, wow, passions of the flesh, this is going to get PG-13. Like, we're going to kind of dive into some stuff here that may be uncomfortable. That's not what Peter's talking about. And the next thing I go to with passions of the flesh, it must be materialism. Like, the material things, that's not it either. The Greek word that Peter uses here is sarx. And what it's talking about is the global, kind of the entirety of the flesh. It's all things. It's not just a sexual aspect. It's not just kind of a pleasures aspect. It goes deeper than that. It is all desires of the world. That's the best, simplest way to say that. All desires for a world around you that is outside of God. It's those things that he's saying, hey, you got to let those go. So abstaining from the desires of the world is really kind of the move here. And I want to use a really clear picture as we wrap this up, because this is sort of where we're going today. And I want to let you know, in the next 5 minutes, I'm going to burden you guys very intentionally, but very lovingly. I've got some categories for each of us to kind of look at and go, what's going on here in my life? But for this, what I want to do is I want you to kind of visualize with me that you're sitting there and you're looking at God on the throne. There he sits in all of his majesty, and he's overseeing kind of the conduct of your life. And what I think happens so many times, and I'm going to use one category to spell this out because I think it's pretty common for all of us. I want to talk about comfort. Comfort, so many times, will end up kind of creeping its way into our life. Now, I want to be clear. I am talking about a heart condition and a motivation. If you experience comfort, are you wrong? Are you in sin? No. You're going to have plenty of times in your life where you're comfortable. When you start to pursue comfort, does that become a little bit of a shift of the heart? Do you guys see the difference there? So now, let's go back to our picture. There sits God on the throne. And we go through our life. We get a little taste of comfort. We like it. So we kind of start plodding along. And next thing you know, something uncomfortable comes up. And rather than keeping our eyes on Jesus, we kind of go, I'm not sure that sounds like much fun. And we kind of sidestep it. And now your motivation has gone from serving God to serving comfort. And I want to tell you, the God of the Bible will not meet the expectations of the tiny little God of comfort. And what happens so many times is that we end up with a throne in front of our throne. We've got a little G-O-D in front of our big G-O-D, and the big G-O-D doesn't meet the expectations that we have for the little G-O-D. And so we sit there and we go, you know what? Why are you putting me in uncomfortable situations? What's the truth? Well, it's because just like we talked about last week, if you're going to be a living stone, you're going to be shaped. Comfort, discomfort, there's going to be a lot of different things that shape your life. But we take our frustrations and we go, I'm uncomfortable and I don't like it. And what we've done is we've taken our eyes off of this little G-O-D that we're serving, and we've kind of lifted up those expectations of always being comfortable, and we're starting to look at God and going, why am I not comfortable? And what's his kind of ever silent response? Because I never told you you would be. That was never part of the deal. I promised you a lot of things. It's not always that you'll be comfortable. I mean, if you've been a believer for more than 10 minutes, you know, listen, it's not always circumstances are golden. Life's not always about how hard you can hit. Sometimes it's about how hard you can get hit and get back up. That's a reality for all of us. I know enough about the lives that are sitting in this room right now to say that I'm not missing the mark. You guys know this. It's not always easy. It's not always fun. So I want to hit on a couple other categories with you and then wrap this thing up. Pleasures. Anything wrong with experiencing pleasure? No. Anything wrong with the pursuit of pleasure? Why? Because it ends up taking you off track. Your eyes go from the throne over to pleasure, and next thing you know, you'll do anything at the cost of serving that God. It's these little idols that we set up. And the enemy's not stupid. He's not going to walk in and tell you, hey, as long as you can experience pleasure all the time, you'll be happy. He doesn't do it from the front. He comes in from behind, and he starts going, all right, here's the deal. I'm going to weave this into your motivations very subtly. You'll never see it enter. And he starts whispering in your ear, you should probably have that. You're entitled to this. You can have, and the next thing you know, we're off track over here doing this thing. And that's where we get messed up. That's where we get kind of off track with Jesus. Next, status and credit. Anyone ever find themselves sitting there going, you know what, I want to serve. And then you find yourself, nobody noticed that you served and it was like a huge disappointment. I'm sure I'm the only one that's ever happened to, so I'll take the silence to mean that I'm alone there. But it's a reality. We start to get into this weird little thing where status and credit become our little idol. And when we don't have it, we find ourselves getting wounded instead of what? Serving from the outpouring of what God's given us. Hollywood Christianity. We, you know, fall into this little, hey, I want to kind of smile and show up to this or that and kind of have everything rocking along. Prosperity gospel. Hey, this will work. Everything's going to be fine. I'll tell you, these last two categories are really, really hard for me. I'm going to be really open with you guys. It's not that bad, so you don't have to be nervous. But this last one, approval of man. Approval of man. I'll tell you, as a young pastor that hasn't been in this game very long, I can absolutely switch the big G-O-D off the throne for a great man. He's my mentor. He's my boss, Corey Shutnick. He's a great guy. But I'll tell you this, Corey has no interest in being on my throne, but it doesn't stop me from putting him there sometimes. And if I'm not careful, all of a sudden I've got this great godly man who's a mentor, but guess what? He's a whole lot easier to please than God. His bar for me is a whole lot lower than God's is. So I kind of look at it and go, man, I'll just do this and I'll do that and I'll keep Corey happy. Yes, Well, what happens? That's not where God's got me going. I always have to honor Corey because he's my authority figure. But the bottom line is God's got way more for me than Corey does. And if I'm not careful, the next thing you know, I've kind of lost track of this thing, and I've got a senior pastor, a boss in Corey Shutnick, and a 13-guy elder board that are sitting in front of my throne, and I can't get my eyes off of them because I'm working so hard to keep all these men happy. You know what? Great indication that approval of man is a deal for you? You're exhausted. I will find myself at times panting spiritually, and I realize, you know what? I am working so hard not to please Jesus, but to please all these other guys. Because there's no rest in that. There's no end. There's always more that I could do to please man. Do you got anyone else? You guys ever feel that? Lastly, false image. We talked about this one a little bit last week. We just want to be comfortable. We want everybody to think, hey, the package is really pretty on the outside. I'm good. My husband's good. Or my wife is good. My kids are good. We're rocking along. Things are good. And so we walk on campus, and what do we know? At home, it's on fire, right? We're a mess. Marriage is a mess. Kids are dealing with stuff. We are not the pretty picture that we sometimes put forward. And what happens? The God of image steps in the way of you finding restoration. We've talked about that before. I don't want to break down. I don't want to seem like I'm not okay. Well, congratulations. You will get to have your image as long as you want it. Because it will totally stand in the way of God restoring you. Not because he doesn't want to, because you're not willing to go, I need help. I'm a mess. And I need some help. Who's with me? And that little God of image starts to kind of creep its way in. Does that make sense? Okay, so here's where we're going today. Peter wraps this up, and I want to kind of explain verse 12 real quick here. Keep your conduct among the Gentiles honorable. So that when they speak against you as evildoers, they may see your good deeds and glorify God on the day of visitation. I think Peter's doing some forecasting here. He's sitting there, and what he knows is, listen, if you guys don't do what I'm telling you in the past 11 verses, none of this is going to work. If you kind of say one thing and do another, I want you to know loud and clear, hey, it's all going to come unraveled. You will be the hypocrite that I just called out in verse 1. That's not going to work. It's all just going to come tumbling down, and you'll make yourself so easy to convict by those who are saying, you guys don't have this together. You're not who you say you are. You're just going to just open yourselves up to all kinds of junk. So do what I'm telling you to do. Keep your conduct among the Gentiles honorable, because if you are dishonorable, then by all means, when they speak against you, they're going to have all of the evidence they need to convict. So don't do that. Now, here's what I want to do with you today. I'm going to have the band start making their way up here. And I want to kind of camp on something that we've been kind of starting with last week. I want to give you some time to respond to this. And I want to use kind of what we talked about last week to start shaping a culture here in the venue. And again, I can't be the only guy that 550 plus people come to on a Sunday morning. One, it's an unnecessary bottleneck. Two, I just can't get to everybody. It won't work. And so what I want to do today is I've given you five or six pretty simple categories here, comfort. And here's what happens all the time. I say something up here and somebody goes, oh my gosh, I've been thinking about that all week. I want to be clear. That's not like any sort of clairvoyant thing that I got going on up here. That's just Jesus convicting you and preparing your heart. So let me tell you this. If the Lord's prepared something for you this morning that you've heard up here and you go, that, I'm doing that. Don't spend another minute doing that. Let's be obedient kids. Let's respond to something the Lord's convicting us of. The Christian life is not about having it all together or doing it perfect. Peter talked about mercy in here today. That's an important deal. Why? Because you're not going to do it perfect. You're actually sinning now and don't even know it. While he's sanctifying you in one area, you're still doing other junk that's just not going to work. And he's got grace for that, and he's got mercy for that. And so what I want you to see is that there's something on your mind today. If you start to recognize you've got a little throne of comfort in front of your big throne, let's do something about it. You may just need to spend some time with Jesus and go, enough's enough. The God of comfort dies today, and I'm ready to kind of reengage with you. Pleasure, status or credit, Hollywood Christianity, approval of man, and false image. If there's something going on in your heart, I want to give you three options today. One of them is this. that if you just need to pray and you just need to be with Jesus, bow your head. That's what we're going to do. Derek's going to lead us right now, and you're going to have an opportunity to respond, just you and Jesus. If you're sitting there today and you're going, you know what, I'm not totally sure how to go about this. I got some stuff going on in my life. It's a little deeper than that, and I need somebody to pray with. And I'll tell you, I'm a little uneasy about it. Great, I'm your guy. I'm happy to do that with you. You got something in your life and you're kind of, hey, I'm not so sure what that looks like, come to me. If what you realize today is that you just need to pray with somebody and you just need to pray with somebody, I want to tell you, we got a couple hundred people in this room that are just as equipped to pray with you today as I am. And if Ephesians 4:12 is our model, where my job is to equip you to do ministry, I'm going to need to give you an opportunity to do some ministry. Right? Amen? So if you're in a spot today where you are ready to minister to someone around you, would you do me a favor? Just put your hand up real quick. You're ready to pray with somebody today. I want you guys to just look around the room and just kind of take note of what's going on. If you need somebody today, these are the people you can go to. Now, I just want you to take a minute and just be quiet with the Lord. Derek's going to lead us. And I just want you to sit back and just go, is there anything that the Lord's asking me to just leave at the throne? And we'll kind of go from there. Derek, they're all yours.